You know, we got civil rights for, you know, we got the vote for blacks before we got the vote for women, before we got the real vote for blacks. We got the civil rights movement. It didn't include gay people to begin with. It's always been piece by piece, and that you don't take away the civil rights of a large number of people.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All righty, we begin another 3 hours of wonderful, wonderful conversation radio. I'm glad you could be along for the ride, whether you are doing so live between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Time this Thursday evening, or whether you listen on podcast, or whether you listen on one of the rotating streams at, oh, let me see, let me tick it off here, iTunes Radio, Talk Spoken Word, Receiver.com, Radiotime.com, Phonostar.com, whether you're listening through one of the standalone players at AfterDowningStreet.org or our particular good friends, the standalone player at WD40.com. How many different ways are there to listen to the horn? We're always looking for more of them. Maybe you're listening on your Nokia phone, or maybe you will be soon. Pretty amazing, isn't it, what this internet technology can do. So, welcome. Welcome. There's an abundance of stuff to talk about this evening. I heard Guy James at the beginning of his program saying, you know, I mean, this happens. There are evenings you crawl in behind the microphone and you're like, oh, I don't want to be here. And but most of the time, even if you do that, you wind up being blessed by the company you get. So that you wind up being better for having been there than having not. Having said that, however, I'll tell you it was a weird little day. I am immensely aggravated. not with anything that got, you know, said or not said about the program. No. You know, the Beast Machine went down a couple of weeks back. And so I RMA'd the motherboard at our expense, mailed it off to the fine folks at Asus Computer, because it was an Asus motherboard. In fact, it was an M2AVM, if you want to know the particulars, those of you who are into the computer hardware scene. You know, before this network started, I was a healthy American male who used his computer for what it was meant to be used for, i.e. viewing porn. Now I sit around looking at computer hardware. You know, just to be just for bonding purposes, I have put adhesive tape on the hinge of my eyeglasses, and I've gone to white short sleeve shirts. No, I'm kidding. No, so I mailed the thing off. It was gone for they guaranteed it would be there for only 10 days for them to diagnose it and fix it or send back a new one. Well, I got it back today, 2 days late. And I opened the box, and I pulled out the board, and I pulled the board out of the little anti-static bag, and lo and behold, it was the same piece of crap board that I had sent in that was burned up and broken. How did I know? Well, the whole reason the thing gave away was because, for those of you who fool with this kind of stuff, there are, teeth or clip plastic hooses that stick out from a frame that goes around the socket itself where you attach the heat sink and fan. Well, The reason the whole thing went down in the first place was because one of those teeth, for reasons known but to God, sheared away, causing the fan to fall away, causing the CPU to overheat, and the motherboard to burn up. I don't mean like smoke pouring out, it's just ruined. So the sons of bitches at Asus, pardon my mouth, and that's probably the wrong epithet too, the incompetent fools at Asus, took the board, held on to it for 12 days, stuck it back in a bag, and mailed it back to me. So I got it, and within 10 minutes was on the phone with yet another customer service professional at Asus, whom I begged to escalate me to a supervisor so that this would not happen twice. Well, Mr. Kincaid, I'll take your number. I've got your number here and your email. You'll hear from me by the end of the day, and we'll get this sorted out to your satisfaction. Well, it's 6 p.m., and I never heard another word from them. So all I can do at this point is tell you that Asus has rotten, lousy, miserable, stinking customer service and even worse technical support. And encourage you not to purchase their products if you can possibly avoid it. I mean, honestly, you take the thing, you pull it out of the box, you stick it on the table, and you leave it on the table for 12 days, and then just turn it around, stick it back in a bag, and mail it back to me, and you think I'm going to be so stupid I don't notice? I mean, it had a physical flaw on it that anybody with a pair of eyeballs and half a brain could see. So that happened about, 4 o'clock. And I realize that one should never, I try never to let the little things bother me. Well, this bothers me because all my email data, all of the updated music that we like to use in the programs, all the promos, all of the more recent PSAs are stored in the computer, and I've the computer that's down, and I hesitate to just pull the thing apart and start copying crap from one disk to another because I thought I'd have it fixed fairly quickly because, you know, Asus is supposed to be a fairly reliable computer company. And I'm not telling you this to, you know, just to get you to commiserate or anything, but the fact of the matter is, this is a computer-based, internet-based radio network. And this is the kind of thing that goes on. Someday, when we're huge, we'll have a department that deals with this. Right now, Peter Godbold and I are that department. The engineering department is headed by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. The streaming department is headed by Ben Birch in Elgin, Illinois. And right now, the kicking furniture department is headed by Bob Kincaid in West Virginia. You know, this is terribly annoying. And, you know, I'm one of those guys who, when he calls customer service, makes a point of bending over backwards to say, "Hey, you're doing a great job. Thank you very, very much." And tell your boss you need a raise. Sometimes when people are really, really good at their jobs, I go ahead and ask them to send me to a supervisor so I can put a note in their file saying how well they do their job. But God Almighty, if it would have been within my power this afternoon, I would have found precisely, you know, Inspector 7 or whoever it is that just left this thing sitting on the bench and 12 days later stuffed it in an envelope and mailed it back to me and fired the little bastard on the spot. This is just... Because, among other things, I think one of the things, at least I hope, that you have come to count on out of this program is that I will pull the curtains back and let you know exactly how everything works here, and in fact, a few little tips and tricks on how things work out in the wide, wide world of, you know, internet radio. Or, you know, talk radio. Because I don't have some sort of monstrous ego that has to be stroked and make you think that this is a more difficult job than what it is. It is taxing, it is trying, and you do have to, it takes a little bit of something special to be able to get behind the microphone and perform every blessed day. I mean, ask Guy James, ask Mark Levine, ask Peter Godbold, ask John Fox, ask Billy Shears how much work it takes. He works all week long to put together a three-hour show of music that you can just kick back to over the weekend and sort of, as he says, you know, put this stuff all behind you and relax for a little bit. There's a ton of work that goes into it. But this is not the moment where I'm going to cue up Bob Seger singing Turn the Page on a Long and Lonely Road East of Omaha. East of Omaha? What? East of Omaha? That's Iowa. East of Omaha, and you're in the damn river, Bob Seger. You know, that's like when Journey sang Just a Small Town Boy Living in South Detroit. I had a buddy from Detroit when I was in college. He said, that shows that Journey are a bunch of idiots. South Detroit is Windsor, Ontario. But I'm running rather far afield. And I hope we will have a conversation later in the program. Please don't let me forget. I have thought long and hard about why so many websites that are arguably or ostensibly liberal have jumped the political shark lately. Have, gone all in on doing everything that they humanly possibly can to divide the party. Whether it's websites that are so over the top pro Hillary that you can't you can't say Barack Obama without being just viciously attacked, or whether it's the websites that are so over the top for Barack Obama that the mere breath of Hillary Clinton causes them to go into paroxysms of rage. I've been trying to figure out why those websites are the way they are. Because, you know, as of Tuesday, most everybody, as I noted, has done voting. I still have a vote. Our friends in Oregon still have a vote. Pennsylvania is still voting. Kentucky. Mississippi. Who else? I don't have the list. And it is now abundantly clear that John Sidney McCain, the McCain-Turian candidate, John McSame, is the nominee, and I can't help but wonder why it is that all of these ostensibly liberal websites haven't turned their sights onto John McCain. John McCain is the enemy. John McCain is part of the problem. At least in theory, we liberals, we progressives, we Democrats, we decent people should be focusing on solving the problem, because that's what we do best. We clean up repiglick and filth and messes better than anything else we do. We fix what they break. So later in the show, if you want to, we will have a conversation about why some of these liberal websites are jumping the shark the way they are. And in anticipation of that conversation, please to apply the old, old Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes axiom. When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, no matter how improbable, is the truth. And I have put that to work, and I've come up with a theory. And it's something that causes me real pain and quite a great bit of grief. But I really, really think it is the truth, because, among other things, look, I'm almost doing it anyway. No, don't do it. Now, I want to start this evening, because if nothing, you can count on this program to have some sense of historical perspective. And that, of course, is the fact, the way it is this evening. This is March the 6th. March the 6th isn't just any old day. Now, another week or so, and we'll be talking about the Ides of March. But before that, before the Ides of March, another event comes around, and that is, well, as our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com has noted, and if you're not getting your RDA of irony, why aren't you? It's free, after all, and it's smart, and it's funny. Eugene notes that the Alamo might have been the first celebrity reality show. Tune in to see Davy Crockett, Jim Bowie, and their 187 roommates cope with the annoyances and stresses of living together under siege, bombardment, and assault. All right here on Fox. Unfortunately, however, the show would have had only 13 episodes, and there would be no possibilities for the thing being renewed. On this day, in 1836, the Alamo fell to the Mexican army. The ruined mission became the shrine of Texas's independence. But it's always good to remember why the Texans were fighting. Why were they? Well, in 1835, the Mexican government adopted a new constitution. And that new constitution replaced a federation of states, think the American Articles of Confederation, with a centralized federal government. Now, under the previous constitution, the province of Texas and its immigrant population had enjoyed considerable autonomy. Among other things, under the Mexican statutes for naturalization, the Americano migrants in Texas were supposed to become Roman Catholic. However, the loose federal system never imposed that theological requirement. On the other hand, the new constitution wasn't interested in it either. In fact, it was anti-clerical and was more likely to prosecute anyone for being too Catholic. Nope. The burr under the saddle, the bee in the bonnet, the real manifestation of what was referred to at the time as Mexican tyranny, was the enforced abolition of a certain property right that was obviously cherished by the folks, the immigrants to Texas. And you gotta wonder, ask yourself, what sacred cause would incite rebellion on the part of Stephen Austin of Virginia, Jim Bowie from Louisiana, Sam Houston from Tennessee, Davy Crockett from Tennessee, and William Barrett Travis from, that's right, South Carolina. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman notes in Texas, independence was a relative term. However, in triumphing over Mexico, the Texans got to keep their property. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Nudge as good as a wink to a blind man. Cyanimal. They got to keep their property at least up till 1865. So as Eugene says, remember the Alamo. Just not the details.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antonio, is a fortress all in ruins that the weeds have overgrown. You may look in vain for crosses and you'll never see a one, but sometimes between the setting and the rising of the sun, you can hear a ghostly bugle as the men go marching by. You can hear them as they answer to that roll call in the sky. Colonel Travis, Davy Crockett, and 180 more, Captain Dickinson, Jim Bowie, present and accounted for. Back in 1836, Houston said to Travis, get some volunteers and go, fortify the Alamo. Well, the men came from Texas and from old Tennessee, and they joined up with Travis just to fight for the right to be free. Indian scouts with squirrel guns, men with muzzle loaders, stood together heel and toe, to defend the Alamo. You may ne'er see your loved ones, Travis told them that day. Those who want to can leave now, those who fight to the death, let them stay. In the sand he drew a line with his army saber. Out of 185, not a soldier crossed the line. With his banners a-dancing in the dawn's golden light, Santa Anna came prancing on a horse that was black as the night. Sent an officer to tell Travis to surrender. Travis answered with a shell and a rousing rebel yell. Santa Anna turned scarlet, played to Quaylo, he roared. I will show them no quarter, everyone will be put to the sword. 185, holding back 5,000. 5 days, 6 days, 8 days, 10. Travis held and held again. Then he sent for replacements for his wounded and lame. But the troops that were coming never came, never came, never came. Twice he charged and blew recall on the fatal third time. Santa Anna breached the wall and he killed them one and all. Now the bugles are silent and there's rust on each sword, and the small band of soldiers lie asleep in the arms of the Lord.
I think I'm going to vomit.
In the southern part of Texas, near the town of San Antonio, like a statue on his fiddle rides a cowboy all alone. And he sees the cattle grazing where a century before Santa Anna's guns were blazing and the cannons used to roar. And his eyes turn sort of misty and his heart begins to glow, and he takes his hat off slowly to the men of Alamo, to the 13 days of glory at the siege of Alamo.
You know, a few years back, Ozzy Osbourne got arrested for indecent exposure for taking a pee on the Alamo. He didn't realize he was taking a pee on the Alamo. He was just wasted out of his mind wandering around San Antonio. I think he was in drag, too. And he took a pee on the Alamo. Boy, you can't do that. That's our shrine to freedom. Horse feathers. Did you hear that crappy little... And I love Marty Robbins, please, okay? I do. I grew up listening to it. And I watched that stupid movie with John Wayne when I was a kid. Let alone the fact that Disney deified David Crockett. You know, he was born not too far from where I was born. Different times, mind you. Big different times. But that line about them fighting for freedom, does anything ever change in this country? We can go and slaughter people and fight and create hell on earth. But there's always some moron willing, they're fighting for freedom. Whose freedom? The Negro slaves' freedom? No, the person fighting for the Negro slaves' freedom, that would have been General Santa Anna. Bunch of right-wing bigots, Travis, Austin, Houston, they named cities after them. Freaks? Explain to me how Jim Bowie is a hero for fighting to keep slaves. You know, maybe it's time for the NAACP to get a little bit militant, move on from South Carolina and take dead aim on the Alamo. That filthy place is a shrine to slavery. But we don't bother to fool with history in this country, do we? Davy Crockett, and you know, David Crockett, there's a fascinating dichotomy. David Crockett was a member of the House of Representatives. And he had, you know, he had fought in a unit in the War of 1812, and he found that he had no real stomach for slaughter. And he saw during the presidency of Andrew Jackson the genocide that Jackson had laid out for the Indians, as he set forth the principles of forced removal. You see, by the time Jackson became president, there was still a significant Indian presence in places that would be like Alabama and Mississippi, in Kentucky and Tennessee, in South and North Carolina, in Virginia, and yes, in West Virginia, in Ohio. And that murderous monster, Andrew Jackson. Oh, I know, I'm a Democrat and I'm supposed to revere Andrew Jackson, and we have dinners, it's Jefferson Jackson Day, yada, yada, yada. Trust me, Andrew Jackson was a hell of a lot more evil than he was good. No, don't trust me. You go do the reading for yourself. But David Crockett, member of the House of Representatives from Tennessee, Lawrence County, Lawrenceburg, opposed openly and plainly Andrew Jackson's plan to commit genocide against the first peoples in this country. And in return for his troubles, Andrew Jackson put to work his political machine, sent messages back home to Tennessee, and did everything in his power and succeeded in destroying the political career of David Crockett. David Crockett, who had no stomach for genocide. But then the whole Texas thing opens up, and according to legend, David Crockett pulls together a band of volunteers. See where the nickname comes from? And they're going to go down to Texas and fight for Texas independence so that Texans can go on owning dark-skinned people. Well, I tell you, there's a noble calling. It goes almost without saying that American history is not quite the sugar-coated, candy-flavored thing that we get spoon-fed in elementary school, in high school. I mean, I could get my kids in here and say, "Tell me about Davy Crockett," and they would give me some line of rehashed drivel that they've been handed in the public schools. And you know, when the show's over, I'm going to go and yeah, Lottie, I know, it's okay, it's in the Bible. Davy Crockett is, that's right, it is. Maybe really somebody call the NAACP, tell them it's time to take aim at the Alamo. Imagine that. One of Texas' largest cities is named after a man who fought to keep slavery legal in Texas. I don't know, David Crockett, was he just a tool? Was he just somebody who needed somewhere to go? I don't know. But I do know that if nobody else does, this program will always, you know, try to do a little bit of honest perspective on reality in history. Fought for freedom, Marty Robbins. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. But, you know, that's... I mention all this because, you know, what's past is prologue, as the bard said. Is there any difference between looking at Austin and Bowie and Travis and Crockett as freedom fighters? God, you can almost hear Ronald Reagan delivering a speech in front of the old mission.
We're here today, Nancy, to honor the freedom fighters from the Alamo.
God, for all I know, he did that at some point during his pathetic, hateful reign as president. But what's past is prologue, and you see the same thing's going to happen in the next few months with regard to John Sidney McCain. And we will be told again, you know, that they won't beat it to death, but it'll be forever present in the background. John McCain, Vietnam War hero, who survived 5 long, tortuous years in a Vietnamese prison camp because he was a Vietnam War hero. Bold and courageous, John S. McCain got into his aircraft and flew missions over the North Vietnam... Blah, 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 blah. What John McCain did was not heroic. What John McCain did, had it been done by another country, the United States would have gladly described as a war crime. John McCain is a war criminal. John McCain is a murderer. John McCain dealt out death in massive doses from the skies. Paddy Bomber John. Thatched Hut Bomber John. And, you know, naturally, and I say naturally because there's no, what would happen to Osama bin Laden if he was turned loose in the middle of, say, Times Square? And I'm not saying you wouldn't have this coming. There wouldn't be a greasy spot left of Osama bin Laden if he was turned loose in the middle of Times Square. Well, you know what? John McCain rained death and destruction on the Vietnamese people. And he survived being shot down. And they still didn't kill him. Although he did, according to his own autobiography, try to kill himself. He was tortured. He was tortured by a people that he had previously tortured. Dropping bombs on thatched roof huts, rice paddies. Dropping bombs on places that were needed to maintain day-to-day civilian life, not military. And he was, in fact, tortured. And you know, please understand, that's the way it is with torture. It's not something you do. Nobody who's serious about torture ever does torture because they expect torture to yield any sort of meaningful information. People who do torture because they mean to inflict agony, and that they mean to inflict punishment for perceived acts of evil previously committed. So I don't think, you know, I don't think you can say that it wasn't about getting information from John McCain. It was about inflicting a little bit of the hell back on John McCain that John McCain had inflicted upon them. And there's nothing special or new about the Vietnamese doing it. We did it in the Second World War. The Japanese did it in the Second World War. The Germans did it in the Second World War. The British did it in the Second World War. It was done in the First World War. It was done in the Russo-Japanese War. It was done in the Spanish-American War with a particular vengeance, especially on our part. It has been documented down through history. So there's nothing. So, you know, while you might see people trying to lionize, well, all I can say is don't buy it. When the GOP machine starts cranking out the John McCain war hero, all I can say is you really don't you don't want to fall for it. And he doesn't get a break. He doesn't get a break at all because, well, I'm sorry. There are value judgments to be made here. And what he did to the Vietnamese peasants, I don't think many of us would approve of. At least no one with a set of morals and a conscience would approve of it.
No, I mean, when they tortured you, did you talk?
Well, I don't think they wanted me to talk, really. I don't think they wanted me to say anything. It was just their way of having a bit of fun, the swines.
Yeah. Exactly.
Monsieur!
yeah, you can, John. Yeah, you can. So that's a starting place for this evening. John McCain, freedom fighter. Jesus, let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi there.
What's up?
You're right about the Alamo, about why it's fought and so on. But you and I both know that it has no more chance of being changed than rain does of falling up. And basically, I think the same is true of getting the truth out about John McCain. It's not going to happen.
Sure it is. As long as I got breath in me, we'll get the truth out about John McCain.
Oh, yeah, you can get the truth out, but in the process, you're going to get a terrific blowback. You're going to get the right-wing spin machine blowing back, going, why doesn't he honor our troops, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. This is it, you know, the whole
thing. Oh, I wish they would. I wish they would. What I wouldn't give to have somebody try that crap on me.
I personally would rather go after him for the things he's done since he came back.
Actually, I'm going to go further back. Let me lay this out real quick. I got to thinking about it today, Susan. John McCain is more. He really is. He's John McSame. In between being pissed off at computer motherboard manufacturers and having other things go sideways, I sometimes actually sit down and think about stuff. It's amazing what can happen inside my head. But you remember how we talked about how George Bush was a legacy admission to Andover and Yale? How nobody with George Bush's mentality could ever get into Yale on their own that way, and the only thing that got him in was not the color of his skin, but the color of his family's money?
Yeah.
Right? Right? Guess what? It's the same thing with John McCain.
Well, of course.
Well, okay, so you know where I'm going.
the Naval Academy has the same kind of deal as, you know, all you have to do is show up and be the son of an admiral. My God, your career's a sap.
Bingo.
Unless you do something horrendous. You know, like being caught in bed with a boy, which he obviously didn't be, wasn't. You know, unless
but he great yeah and but it, it but the comparison continues, it extends further. George Bush got out of Yale by the skin of his teeth. So too did John McCain get out of the Naval Academy by the skin of his teeth, bottom of his class.
Brilliant.
John McCain didn't have money of his own. He had to have the support of someone else. That someone else came in the form of Cindy McCain, heiress to a beer fortune, and Charles Keating. In other words, every time John McCain has screwed up, there has been someone there to bail him out, just like George Bush.
Yeah, I would like to go after you for that. Because in that, he's just, like you said, he's McCain. It's another, my God, it's another George Bloody Bush. And they can't, let's face it, you can't say, well, you're not supporting the troops if you say, wait a minute, this guy is a born, pardon the word, F up. And then lay it out.
And that's what I intend to do.
Just like George.
We're gonna lay it out. We're gonna lay it out on McCain. And I don't care if the rest of the so-called left blogosphere or the liberal internet, I don't care if it tears itself to little itsy bitsy teensy tiny microscopic molecular pieces on the pissing match between Hillary and Obama. I, for one, am going to start on McCain, and I'm not going to let up. I'm going to attack him from now until Election Day.
I am getting really disappointed in both the Democratic candidates because they're just not getting deployed. They need to be going after McCain.
I think that's only smart.
Two pairs of eyes ought to be swiveling like a pair of gun mounts and focusing in on him and firing at will. Instead, they're going after each other like twigs.
Now, somebody needs to hang a banner in both Hillary and Obama's campaign headquarters, similar to the sign that they apparently had in Bill Clinton's at headquarters in his first run. Remember that one? It's the economy, stupid. You remember that sign?
Yeah.
Well, we need a sign for Hillary and Obama that says, it's McCain, stupid.
Well, I tried calling the Hillary campaign to basically more or less say that. They don't answer their phone. So I figured I would try and call the Obama campaign to tell them that. They don't answer their phones either.
You talking about their campaign phone there in Oregon, or were you trying to call national?
No, they're national.
Wow, and they're not taking calls?
No. Apparently they're too busy. So much for the 3 o'clock phone call.
Oh, no, tell me you dialed at 3 o'clock.
No, I didn't.
That would be a great little stunt radio piece to call the campaign headquarters at 3 a.m. That's almost worth staying up for.
Yeah, that would be.
Hi, this is Bob Kincaid from the Head On Radio Network, America's Liberal Voice. I just thought I'd call the campaign at 3 a.m. to see what kind of an answer I got, see who'd pick up the phone. I got an answering machine. This is not a good sign.
You get a recording, and then it sends you to a number that rings endlessly on both of them.
That's too funny. That's a level of irony for which I was not prepared, Susan.
Oh, yeah, I just loved it. I just, oh, my God, I don't believe this. Grow up, you two people. You're behaving like two-year-olds.
I know.
Grow up.
Well, I want to, you know, I'm going to, no part of McCain is off limits as far as I'm concerned. I believe, you know, from his legacy admission to Annapolis, to his barely getting out of Annapolis, to what he did in Vietnam, to what he did when he got home from Vietnam, to what, hey, look, to what he did while he was being tortured, and what he said.
Well, if he was halfway sensible, I hope he sang like a bird.
It's not like he knew anything.
Yeah, anybody who is, whether you know anything or not, if you're being tortured, the only sensible response is to sing. Sing loudly and sing well.
But again, like that clip from Dr. Strangelove says, the information is not the point under that circumstance. It is to inflict just a tiny pinprick percentage point of the pain that the person in question has already inflicted on them.
Now, anything.
I mean, let's just be honest. Let's compare for just a minute, Susan.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Who do you think felt more pain, John McCain in the 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton, or say a little 4-year-old Vietnamese girl burning with napalm running down a road? Who felt more pain?
Well, you know the answer to that as well as I do. That poor little kid.
And how many times do you reckon that happened with every napalm bomb that that Napalm John dropped?
I'm afraid to find out. I really don't want to, because then I have to sleep at night, and I'm having enough of a problem with that because I keep seeing those kids in Fallujah.
If everybody else, and you know, this is just how I am. If people, oh Bob, lay off, yeah. If everybody else doesn't, I will. I will talk about war crimes, Susan. I will talk about inhumane conduct. I'll talk about the kind of stuff that, you know, gets you sent to hell if there really was one.
I got to tell you, Bob, do you know what I want done when the White House changes hands?
What's that?
I want the people that ordered the phosphorus dropped on Fallujah turned over to The Hague.
I want that Marine that threw the puppy turned over to The Hague, okay? I want him found or identified. I want some, I mean, do you realize, you know, that video that ELO put up?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, you saw it. Do you know how far and wide she had to search to find that? It had been banned from YouTube because the American people are not allowed to see the recreational activities of those people who are defending our freedom.
Well, before it got banned, it made the national news.
Yeah, but it needs to be seen, you know, it needs to be available.
Yeah.
So that's one of the nice things. I mean, it's up there at the website. And the people who haven't seen it, who want to see it, can.
I'm surprised PETA isn't all over this.
I haven't seen that they are or aren't. They may be.
Yeah. Maybe they're waiting to try and find out who it is, because they'll probably make his life a living hell. Which, you know. But the people who ordered and dropped that phosphorus in Fallujah, I want them taken care of. That was a war crime then. It was a war crime before they did it. It's a war crime now, and I want them punished.
Yeah.
And they knew it was a war crime.
Or how about the Blackwater contractors who just merrily shoot random vehicles?
People, that's a war crime.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
Of course, I don't call them Blackwater, I call them brown shirts, because that's what they are. The Bush's brown shirts.
Yep.
It's just a question of whether or not we're going to have a night of the long knives. Yeah, I'm starting to get wound up.
Yeah, better not. Hey, Susan, thanks a million.
You too. Hey. I love you, and my love to Agnes.
I sure will. Hang in there.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I love it. The campaigns are arguing about 3 a.m. phone calls, and you call them in the middle of the afternoon, and you get voicemail. Life in the nation of the ironically challenged. Some email. Our pal Cindy writes in from the Great Northwest. Thank you for reminding the world that the Alamo stands for the defense of slavery. Now tell them another untold truth, that at the Battle of the Alamo, those fierce and talented Texans got their butts whooped by the Mexicans. That's right. The only Americans ever to lose to the Mexicans were the Texans. And Texas was dragged kicking and screaming into the Union. She also notes today they're the only state in the Union with a standalone electric grid. Well, be darned. From our pal Kate, awesome juxtaposition. Mark Thompson is broadcasting live from the museum in Selma. This is Jubilee weekend. Tearful evening. God, our history is so shameful. And a request. Oh, the glory of that Alamo song. Oh, the glory of that Alamo song. Please play Ballad of the Green Berets next. Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please. Ask and it shall be given unto you.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 when the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 when the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest, make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
Your duty, yours to fulfill. You join the peacetime army, it's no longer a drill. Take a look around, if you have any doubts, to free the world from tyranny is what this is about. And they say it's gonna take some time, every day There's one less of you in line. You are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. They hold you to a standard themselves they can't sustain. And at home, the pundits start to spin. Politicians and oil men cash in. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and the poor man's fight. God bless your blood, God bless your sacrifice, God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, fire on the earth, time to tell the truth, what is this worth? And the children that today are playing games, conscription, tomorrow calls their names. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I think maybe my experience with ASUS customer service just put me in a crappy mood, but I'm in no mood to put up with fighting for freedom around the world, bombing little children for freedom, yay! Looky here, Sergeant Carter, I got me a baby on my bayonet. Golly! Sorry, not up for it. Don't feel like putting up with... No. Mm-mm. No, no, because I know just a little bit too much American history to put up with that kind of militaristic, jingoistic horse crap. Okay? Okay. Now, let me just get this out of the way. If you've got something you want to bring to the table, that's fine. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's toll-free. If you need us to carry the freight, we're more than happy to do so. If, on the other hand, you can make the call on your own nickel, it's 304-658-3333. And I promise you I won't keep you on hold forever and a day, and we'll get to your phone call just as quickly as possible. Now, I do a lot of prep, reading story after story after story after story, trying to get ready for any given night show. And I've got a list of websites that I go to. And some of those websites, I'm not going to name names, some of those websites have become so absolutely up to their necks, frenzied, insane, bug-sprayed crazy with hate for either one Democratic candidate or another, that there's no point going to them anymore. There's no other news there. except for snarky editorializing about whichever candidate they happen to be behind. And they're doing this, again, I note, at a time when the primaries are practically over. And yet they persist in it. And over the last couple of weeks, month, I have sat time after time after time after time trying to figure out why. And I finally come to a conclusion that I'm not happy with, but which, you know, like the old Sherlock Holmes thing, after you've eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, no matter how improbable, is the truth. And here's the conclusion I've reached. And this may take some explaining. Long about the dawn of the Internet, websites began gearing up. And this is in the world before blogs. The land before blogs. Then, when George Bush gets the Supreme Court to install him in the White House, blogging begins to take off. Websites pop up. And these websites are geared, their sole function, all in the world they exist to do, is to provide, on the liberal side of things, factual information with which to oppose and inform, with which to oppose the Bush administration and inform people of just how vile, nasty, and evil the Bush administration is. And it's been that way for 8 years now. And there are those out there, on ostensibly, theoretically, our side of the fight, who can't imagine functioning in a world without a George Bush for a target. Among other things, they haven't taken enough of a hard look at McCain to realize that he is nothing but a Bush clone. And listen, this is a theory, okay? I'm not presenting this as fact, but I do believe it to be fact. These people who cannot imagine a world without a Bush as the focus of their efforts and as the source of their rather nice livings, are in a rather terrified and desperate place. Now, bear in mind that a radio network and a radio program is a far, far different thing from a static text-based website. Because radio is dynamic, radio is ever-changing, and radio, frankly, has more content in it than a blog does. I tallied it up one evening. One hour of conversation radio led by a host who has some idea of what he or she is doing equals about 20 pages of text. There's not a blogger out there doing 20 pages of text a day. Okay, so you know, just kind of jot that down. People who know the radio gig and are marginally intelligent, I view myself as marginally intelligent, have a broad enough interest base that no matter who is in the White House, they'll be able to continue doing shows and be able to continue talking about what matters. It's particularly easy for somebody like me because I'm some sort of wild-eyed liberal who wants universal health care, who wants to not start wars that don't have to be started, who wants to fight wars when we are attacked and not a moment before, who thinks that our greatest national security threat is the tandem evil of ignorance and poverty. And you know what? I don't think with the election of either a Democrat or a Republican, any of those issues are going to go away. So I don't care who gets inaugurated. Well, I do care. I desperately want a Democrat inaugurated on January 20th, 21st, 20th, whatever, 2009. I desperately want that. Because, again, it's not so much the dog that I have in the hunt, but the puppy that my children and grandchildren have in that hunt. We have got to see work begin on a better tomorrow. That work will never begin with John McCain in the White House. And if we are so fortunate as to have a Democrat in the White House come January 2009, I'll still be here. And the Horn will still be here. Guy James will still be here. Because there will still be plenty of work to do. There will still be an occupation to end. There will still be, on the day that a Democrat is inaugurated as President of the United States, some 50 million Americans who cannot go to the doctor when they're sick, who, in extremis, say, "No, honey, I don't want to go to the hospital. We can't afford the bill." That issue's still going to be here. It won't be going away anytime soon. The real pros will still be here. Tom Hartman will still be here. Mike Malloy will still be, I don't mean here, but Tom, they'll still be broadcasting. Malloy, you know, Malloy's been through Reagan, Bush, 8 years of Clinton, 8 years. He's not going anywhere because he's a pro. And he knows that there's always going to be something to talk about. Because we are not likely in 8 years or 18 to get to the place in America where America desperately needs to be. I'm not speaking for him. I'm just extrapolating based on past performance. On the other hand, there are those who cannot live, who cannot function, and who cannot rake in thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a month without a Republican to focus their wrath upon. And those are the websites that are busting their ass to divide the Democratic Party. Printing every last salacious, scandalous piece of gossip or surrogate-generated garbage in an effort to push candidate A or candidate B. And moreover, the goal is not to advance the political future of that candidate. I am convinced of this now. I've thought about saying this before, but I kind of intimated at it. I sit here speaking with you convinced this evening that that is in fact the case. With a Democrat in the White House, some of these websites and some of the people who run them realize that their cash cow is going away. To be sure, I recognize that some of the listenership may be in the same boat. It could be that once we get a Democrat in the White House, people will say, "Well, yeah, everything's all right now. It's okay, Bob. You can go home now." You can do something else now, Bob. Thanks for the horn. Goodbye. And that contributions will dry up. That possibility exists. But we won't go away on our own. On the other hand, I am now convinced, and I'm just going to say this, that some of these websites are doing their dead level best to divide the Democratic Party and divide Democratic voters so as to get John McCain into the White House and continue their very reason for existence. I'm just convinced of it. Please tell me you get this. I mean, I want to hear from you. If I'm crazy, I want you to tell me I'm crazy. I'd like to be crazy on this one. But when you're raking in $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month because you're out there hammering away, you know, you're protecting democracy, and you realize that that's all going to dry up and blow away with the inauguration of a Democratic president, what would you be praying for? I said it last night. What do you suppose Flush Flimball is praying for even as we speak? Do you think that he is praying for the election of John McCain? Hell no! My God, it is a kid in a candy store for him, and the kind of sleaze and filth that he purveys, and the same with Laura Ingraham, and the same with Neil Bortz, and the same with Savage and O'Reilly and Hannity and the rest of that filthy crowd. What fun is it for them with McCain in office? They've had to carry water for George Bush for 8 years. It's a hell of a lot more fun for them to be slinging mud than carrying it. And there's no difference between the Flush Flimballs and some of these humongous so-called liberal websites in that they are both aching for a continuation of the life of their cash cow. Nobody wants to turn the goose that lays the golden eggs into foie gras. And for some of these sites, the election of Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama is precisely that. It is wringing the neck of the goose that lays the golden egg. Pure and simple. For our part here, we maintain a modest request for funding that keeps us going, period. I'll tell you now that if I was asking on behalf of this network for enough funding to be able to pay everybody on this network, we'd be talking about a benchmark of something around $10,000 a month. You want to know why Joe Vecchio isn't on the air anymore? Joe Vecchio is not on the air anymore because Joe Vecchio had to sell his audio equipment so he could stay alive. But he's working on coming back. We build computers. We work on the stream. Ben Birch is a one-man operation at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He keeps these streams going. Peter Godbold is our IT department. Yeah, I was joking. John Fox is our engineering department. Sometimes we spend whole days working on stuff just to keep it going. Nobody gets a dime out of it. So, you know, our requests are, I think, modest at the very least. But this isn't about us. This isn't about the best of liberal talkers, because they're going to find stuff to talk about. But for a whole lot of so-called left-wing blog sites, websites, the goose that laid the golden egg is on its back and it's coughing up blood. Because we just might, if we don't hopelessly screw up, we just might get a Democratic president, and then everything comes apart. I hope I'm wrong. I hope you can prove to me that I'm wrong. Let's let somebody try. Hi, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Robert. Bob.
Hey, Robert, how are you? Yeah, how are you?
Doing good. Yeah, I had a couple interesting comments I wanted to make, but the first one was about the Manchurian candidate, McCain.
Yes.
You know, this came up a few weeks ago, or last week, about his being eligible to become president in the first place, because he was born on a military base.
He was born in the Panama Canal Zone, yes.
Right. And, I checked the Crooks and Liars one time. They actually had a legal document that actually indicated that military bases are not American soil. What was your opinion on this?
I don't know if this works by extension, but if he had been born in an embassy in Prague, for instance, he would clearly have been born on American soil.
Right.
Panama Canal Zone, you know, that's probably American soil because at the time it was under lease to the United States. So as tenants, we were legally holding the property in some sort of title agreement. It wasn't an occupation.
Mm-hmm.
If he had been born in occupied Tokyo, different story.
Right. Well, it's just sort of, you know, it came up on CNN, and they talked about a rule change. And I was kind of knocking my head against the wall that, you know, the Constitution is not a set of rules, it's a set of laws, and then it just sort of disappeared from the news. So I'm not even sure this is even being followed up or what happened to the story.
I saw it mentioned and then down the memory hole, Robert.
Yeah, down the memory hole. Yeah.
If it's a legitimate enough cause, somebody should bring a lawsuit.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, this, to me, it seems pretty damn questionable because, you know, according to the legal document I looked at, you know, in military bases are not, you know, American property, but should have been followed up, I would thought. But anyway,
you know how these people are. They will parse, please bear in mind, the Supreme Court will do anything it is asked to do to get another Republican in the White House.
Oh, within a day. I mean...
Yeah, because remember, you know, Fat Tony Scalia and Slappy Thomas and Tony Bad Breath Alito and John Roberts, they're just itching for one more right-wing freak to go on the court, and then they can make Tony Kennedy come over and be a full-time con, which it probably won't take a lot of convincing. And you'll have a 6-3 majority, and the right wing will be able to do whatever it wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was watching, the last debate or something, and Wolf Blitzer, for the first time in his life, actually asked a good question to both candidates. And he said, what about the dream team? Would you, Obama, accept Hillary as a vice president, or Hillary, would you accept Obama as a vice president? And the response really caught me by surprise. It was just an ocean of words that came out of both of their mouths. And I tend to see myself as a smart guy, but I couldn't understand exactly what they were saying, so I sort of translated it into the following, that I'm such a pompous ass, I can't imagine this other person who's given me a hard time being my vice president. And, you know, from both people.
And I know, Robert, that some people are calling that a dream ticket.
Yeah.
I'm calling it a nightmare ticket.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, you got two Northerners, right? One's black, one's white.
You got two Illinois. So, you got two Illinoisans for all intents and purposes.
Right. So, I don't see how you're going to capture the South with that kind of situation. I'm looking at the Daily Coast right now, and they actually have a delicate national matchup between McCain and Clinton, and then also McCain and Obama. It's kind of interesting because, you know, again, McCain takes the South, takes the West, and the Democrats take California, maybe New Mexico and parts of the Northeast, and that's it. So,
in other words, the typical Democratic strategy.
Right, exactly. So, and you know, Florida's, you know, again up for grabs, and you know there'll be crap there as usual. So yeah, it's I don't know. I don't see how this is going to shake out. I mean, because if Obama doesn't take Hillary, then all these women will just sort of take a powder or not be enthusiastic, show up at all. And if Obama's tossed under the bus, then the blacks take a powder, and then, you know, so I don't know.
I hope you're wrong, Robert. I'm not gooning on your position, but I hope you're wrong.
I hope I'm wrong too, yeah, because I sure as hell don't want to see.
And I hope that we can have a healing time by the convention. You know, Guy James did a very, very good job earlier. It was probably still while you were asleep. But Guy James did a good job earlier of saying, you know, let's stop this business of, you know, we need to have an anointing right now. And because, you know, he points out, you know, Clinton didn't lock up the nomination until June. I'm talking about Bill. You know, Gore was a different circumstance. Kerry locked it up early, but that was an anomaly. It's not how Democratic Party politics usually work. Now, the other side of that coin, however, is that historically speaking, every time we have a brokered or a divided convention, we wind up on the losing end of the presidential stick.
Yeah.
So I'm with Guy James when he says, you know, listen, let's everybody step back off the ledge for a little bit. But on the other hand,
what do you think about the another election in Florida, Michigan? Because that's the new debate now.
This is a screw up of monumental proportions, and I don't blame the Democratic Party for it. It was Florida and Michigan who refused to abide by the rules, and
yeah,
I'm not a real rule oriented guy, Robert. You know that.
Yeah.
But. There's a hell of a lot of irony involved, because if they had had their primaries when they were supposed to,
yeah,
they would have decided the nominee.
Right.
They would have had what they moved their primaries up to have in the first place, and that was a say so in choosing the nominee.
Well, I was rather annoyed being a Florida voter, absentee of course, but that, you know, I was never consulted about this whole process, and they just made the decision willy nilly. And now they're talking about having maybe a possible another, you know, re-election, which I would support, but, you know, they were asking the DNC to pay for it, and I was going, wait a second, you know, the Florida people made the decision, why should the DNC pay for it?
The Florida people broke the rules, yeah.
They should pay for it.
And, well, I've got another question to ask, and it's actually one that Guy James asked, but you being a Floridian, I appreciate your... Guy said earlier today, okay, so we have another election.
Right.
Guy said, I don't get to vote for the guy I voted for in the first place.
Hmm.
In other words, what that election does is it takes everybody who voted for Kucinich or everybody who voted for Edwards or Dodd or Biden or any of those people, and it tells them, okay, that didn't count, do over. Now you can either vote for Hillary or Obama, or you can stay home.
Well, I would much rather have that situation than have a situation where my vote never counted in the first place.
That's true.
It's a charade. It's just, you know, a farce.
And again, you know, it's not that pressing an issue. I think if Florida and Michigan are going to do a revote, they should be put in line at the very end.
Oh, of course, at the very end, and then, you know, do it again. But it's going to take some time because, you know, you have to get the absentee ballots out to, you know, people like me, which takes maybe 2 weeks or so, and then you have to wait until it's mailed back. So they have to make this decision fairly quickly.
Yeah, they do. And the other thing, of course, is that the process is I think the Credentials Committee of the Democratic National Committee meets sometime in June, so that they could conceivably ask to be seated there. But what do you do if they're seated? People did and did not campaign based upon how the DNC was handling the rules at the time. This really is a monumental screw up.
Oh yeah, it's a second world election process, especially what, you know, what you saw in Texas. That was insane.
So, you know, I'm guessing there will probably be a revote. I'm hoping that revote is at the very end.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, it,
and then we will have, whoever is, I forget, what is it, Puerto Rico's the last primary, and then 2 weeks after that we do Florida and Michigan, and that will, it'll be like Super Bowl week.
Yeah. I mean, it's much better than to have that than to have these super delegates decided, because then that's going to leave a lot of bad, you know. I mean, that's the way it's shaping up as it is. So, I mean, looking at the pledge votes to come, delegates to come, neither of them are most likely to get the nomination. So you have the superdelegates doing it. No. Do Michigan, Florida again. Do it right.
Yeah, I think that's probably where it's going to wind up. But I don't want the DNC paying for Florida's mistake. Oh, No.
They were stupid to do this and to do it without a referendum, you know, without the voice of the people. That really pissed me off. So, yeah. I don't want to tie up the line too long. I just wanted to say hi and.
Well, I'm glad you did, and I have taken it upon myself, you know, like I'm some sort of crusader. But I've taken it upon myself, Robert, to try to get off the ledge, as I was saying. I want a nominee who can go into the process without a divided party and who can actually heal the wounds and bring and win the White House. That matters to me. I mean, this is like, how about a sports analogy? This is about putting all your effort into winning the league championship and forgetting that there's one more game after that.
Right. So.
And that seems very short-sighted as far as I'm concerned.
On the note of the funding, have you ever contacted any liberal NGOs or liberal corporations?
We have.
Okay.
If you can get past the receptionist, yeah. Most of the time you can't get past the receptionist.
Mm.
And it's because largely, there was such an out. Oh, we need liberals on the radio, and I agree. I mean, I would, of course, I agree.
Oh yeah.
On the other hand, however, getting people who don't know radio to understand how important this medium is a learning curve that I have come to believe is almost impossible to climb. Because for the most part, there's a mindset out there that, you know, the old school still wants to do its politicking with printed emery boards and bags of sunflower seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And the occasional case of Four Roses pints in the trunk.
Mm.
And as a consequence of that, what you get... Really? Talk radio? You really think it's important? You do? I don't. I don't listen to talk radio. I don't know nobody who listens to talk radio.
Mm.
And that's a tough nut to crack.
Mm.
So, you know, there you have it. But you know, we continue to grow, and as long as we continue to grow and we continue to survive, eventually the very weight of what we do will become self-sustaining, and it'll have to be dealt with just because people who want other people to hear their message realize that, hey, look, you know, there's X number of thousands of people or a million people listening, blah 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 blah. I want to reach those people. Then it'll support itself in that regard.
Right.
So yeah, that's what we're dealing with, and you know, so far we're hanging on, and you know, thank God. No, not thank God. Thank the people who care enough to make this go.
Right. Well, I'll send in some more money, and we'll just keep brainstorming and think about other ways to, you know, get some more money going.
All right.
So.
Appreciate it, Robert.
Take care.
You have a great morning.
I sure will.
All right. Bye now. Our good friend Robert calling from Japan. So I got an email here, again, a response from our pal Cindy. She says, I won't go away. Just like I'm... You know, see, I got to get glasses. Just like I'm quite aware that having a Democrat in the White House is not going to solve this nation's problems. Did Clinton? To some extent, Clinton tried. They, you know, they tried to do something with health care. Harry and Louise stopped us. The insurance companies stopped us. But the attempt was made. And I don't think it was a false attempt. It may have been a bit of a wet-behind-the-ears attempt, but it wasn't a false attempt. No, I don't think the listenership will go away. I don't think the people who want factual information will go away. But the thing is, this is a hot dynamic medium. A website that is a little more than a list of news stories or something like that, not so much. So they've got to get it now. And they've also got to try to do everything they can possibly do to make sure that they continue to get it. And part of that is making sure that no Democrat gets in the White House. That is, I realize that's incredibly paranoid, and it is not, it's the, it's, can you come up with a, can you, honest to God, can you? You call, you tell me. You know the phone number. Can you tell me a better explanation for why websites are behaving the way that they are in this circumstance? I'm just, because I've run every possible scenario I can, and this is the only rational conclusion that I can make. That there are simply some organizations that see the election of a Democratic president as the end of their meal ticket. And let me tell you, it's a big, big lottery-sized meal ticket. $300,000, $350,000, $500,000 a year. One website out there charges $14,000 for one ad for 1 week. They don't even guarantee you views. What happens to those places if the source of the thorn in the paw gets pulled? What happens? So, you know, there you have it. Yeah, maybe this issue doesn't matter. Maybe I'm the only one who's sitting around wasting any time on it. God knows there are other issues today. Oh, boy. I get in back here to do my show prep, and I see a headline that just makes me want to, well, scream. Because I know where we're going, and again, you know, the little paranoid tinfoil hat goes on, and I'm like, get the medicine. Most particularly, I'm talking about this story that of what happened overnight in New York City. I mean, there's stuff going on all over the world that is earth-shaking and bowel-watering. Times Square bombing caught on tape. I'm looking at the CNN story, but it's been covered by the other news services as well. Security camera footage shows a person approach a Times Square military recruiting office and ride away on a bicycle shortly before a bomb damaged the building Thursday morning. Authorities consider the bicyclist a possible suspect in the bombing, which occurred about 3:45 a.m. and caused no injuries. Well, if it happened at 3:45 a.m., and if it was deliberate, it seems that it was more of a statement than it was an attempt to do any physical harm. So, you know, I'm an advocate of nonviolence. I don't believe in bombing people or bombing things. But I don't think this one's going to run down the memory hole, do you? I don't think this one's going to go anywhere. I don't think this one's just going to disappear. No, 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 no. No, this is domestic terrorism. This is homegrown terrorism. You remember that little congressional act we were talking about a while back? Something about homegrown terrorism? There's a lot of us who opposed that and said, you know, this is just way too overreaching. Well, now, look what's happened. What's the White House saying about this? Well, with regard to the bomb, one spokesman says this was not a particularly sophisticated device. Police Commissioner Ray Kelly in New York. This was not a particularly sophisticated device. Sounds like not particularly sophisticated. It was an ammo box. M80 in an ammo box. I mean, if it was much of anything, wouldn't like our terror threat level be up at oh my god or something? New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg said, "The fact that this appears deliberately directed at the recruiting station insults every one of our brave men and women in uniform stationed around the world fighting to defend our freedoms." I call BS on you, Mayor Bloomberg. Because no one is around the world fighting for my freedom. My freedom is guaranteed by the United States Constitution. I mean, I don't mean to just, you know, be overly pedantic about it, but the Constitution establishes the military. The Constitution also acknowledges the freedoms. My freedom does not require the slaughter of any Iraqi children, the murder of any Iraqi mommies, or the detention, torture, and death of any Iraqi daddies. My freedom does not require the occupation of Iraq. We clear on that, Mayor Bloomberg, are we? I hope so. No, apparently it was a big scary bomb. A woman told WABC TV, "I was on the 44th floor and I heard it. I could feel it from up there." Hey, lady, come on here to the hills and hollers of West Virginia. I'll let you stand out in the yard and feel some real explosions, sister. Oh, Jesus, a little bomb went off in front of the recruiting station in New York. Come to West Virginia, honey. I'll take you places all over this state where you can feel and see and hear explosions that'll rattle your damn guts, and nobody's doing anything about it. Because it's progress and it's business. The evidence was sent to the FBI's crime laboratory in Quantico, Virginia. Reckon any of this investigation is going to be handed over to the fine folks at Homeland Security? You think? I mean, is there even a remote chance of that? I mean, this is, after all, a terrorist bombing in the homeland, isn't it? I ask because of a news story that came out in the last day or so. You know about what the Department of Homeland Security's been up to, right? Headline, "Crimes by Homeland Security Agents Stir Alert." Subhead, "Arrests of Homeland Security agents on bribery and drug charges have a top executive of the agency worried." He's worried. He's a little bit nervous. Bribery, drug trafficking, migrant smuggling, rape. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is supposed to stop these types of crimes. Instead, so many of its officers have been charged with committing those crimes themselves that their boss in Washington recently issued an alert about, quote, disturbing events and the, quote, increase in the number of employee arrests. Thomas S. Winkowski is the Assistant Commissioner of Field Operations for the Department of Homeland Security. He wrote a memo to more than 20,000 officers nationwide, noting that employees must behave professionally at all times, even when not on the job. That's right, Homeland Security agents, just because you're not on the clock doesn't mean you don't still have to obey the law. Wait a minute. This is the Bush administration of Department of Homeland Security. Badges? We don't need those stinking badges. Winkowski wrote in the November 16th memo, it was obtained by the Miami Herald, "It is our responsibility to uphold the laws, not break the law." What was he writing to, third graders? Let's see. What are the concerns? Miami Herald says, among other things, that a Customs and Border Protection officer at Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport was charged in February with conspiring to assist a New York drug ring under investigation by tapping into sensitive federal databases. Oh, that's charming. Mr. Winkowski described that conduct as unacceptable. It is unacceptable. Oh, it goes on and on and on. Then there's Elizabeth Moran Tuala, a 6-year veteran of Homeland Security. She allegedly accessed an electronic database known as Treasury Enforcement Communications System and tapped into that system several times to pass along information to a Delta Airlines baggage handler who was conspiring with a drug ring to transport cocaine and heroin from the Dominican Republic, for all we know, little boys for flush flemball too, to New York. Let's see, what else? Other incidents have involved officers and agents accepting payoffs for migrant smuggling, drug trafficking, witness tampering, embezzlement, and, yes, rape. This just... And you wonder why suddenly there's a story about a bomb going off at a building in New York. Rape. Yeah, rape. Charming, ain't it? Just makes you want to stand up and sing. But wait a minute, our problem is Iraqi people? Yeah, sure, you betcha. So let me see, this story broke about 2 or 3 days ago about all the indictments and arrests and misfeasance and malfeasance in the Department of Homeland Security. And now we've got a really scary domestic terrorism, Homeland Security, military recruiting station bombing in New York. Okay, so, I don't know, maybe that's just a little too much paranoia. Oh, God, something, okay, we've got to break it up a little bit. A little bit of funny. Over on Fox News, Brian Kilmeade asked one of the female co-hosts, his female co-hosts, what's her name, Earhart, I guess referring once again to something about Hillary Clinton, asked her if she ever wore pantsuits herself. And she said she had, but, quote, this is why I love Crooks and Liars. Here at Fox, we like to be feminine, so we don't wear the pants. Kilmeade responded by saying, if I was to run for office, I'd run on the pro-skirt platform. Oh. Okay, that was our little humor breakup thing, but I don't think it worked. And I said the other night that I wasn't going to talk about stuff, issues, conflicts around the globe that didn't have any direct impact on us. But my God, I haven't mentioned one of these in a long, long time. Because they're just so day-to-day. I suppose they're ubiquitous in the hell that we have created out of Iraq. A double bomb attack in Baghdad in the last 24 hours killed 53 people and wounded 125. Apparently, the bombing was done in such a way as to get people to come toward it. The first bomb went off at about 7 p.m. in the Karada district of central Baghdad. And then when other people gathered to help the wounded, another bomber lit it up, and killing and wounding a lot, a whole lot, a great deal, an agony's worth of more. Most of the casualties came during the second attack. Oh, but if we leave Iraq, the place will descend into chaos. What the hell do you call this? Oh, the surge is working! Golly, Ned. So, you know, is it any surprise? Is it just paranoia on my part that I happen to notice that, you know, we've got this little bombing problem in New York, and it just happens to come on the heels of a news story about abuses in where? Yeah, the Department of Homeland Security. This is just, well, it's just another day in paradise, isn't it? And meanwhile, I know Mark Levine touched on this some in his program. I think it probably wouldn't do us any harm to talk about it here. We're getting ready to cave in, those so-called blue dog Democrats. They're getting ready to cave in the House of Representatives to Bush's demand for telecom immunity. And I'm going to have a fit when they do. I'd like to hope that they won't. But, you know, come on. Those of you who like to gamble from time to time, what kind of odds do you give it? What kind of odds do you give the Democrats in the House caving in and going back on the legislation that they originally drafted and setting up telecom immunity just to appease dear leader? Can you stand another 4 or 8 years of this kind of appeasement? This is, you know, this is where a president becomes important. Do you feel like that either Hillary or Obama would sit there and demand that the telecoms be made immune? Because I don't get that sense. I just don't. Wouldn't be the first time I've been proven wrong, but I don't have, there's nothing out there to suggest that they would. So, once again, who's in the White House does matter. You know, the most important, I say it again and again and again, and I hope it's sinking in, the most important branch of three co-equal branches of government under our constitutional system is the Congress. The president passes no laws. Neither does the executive branch. The very structure of our country is set forth by the Congress. Yeah, I know. Jay Rockefeller supports immunity. And that prompted me, just as Mark Levin called and gave Hail Columbia to his senator, Jim Webb, for voting to pee on the Constitution, I called Jay Rockefeller's office and explained, listen, I don't have to vote for his opponent, but I darn sure don't have to vote for him. And that's my vow. I'm leaving his name blank in November. I'm going to leave his name blank in May as well. Because even if he will compromise my values in Washington, I will not compromise my values in sending him there. It's the least I can do. Hi, who have I got?
Me again.
Hey, what's up?
I just wanted to tell people the telecom immunity is a certainty. If you do not light up those phones, get on the phones and start screaming at your congresspersons. My congress critter told me today when I screamed at him, my daily call, that they are getting hundreds of phone calls on this.
Which way?
Against telecom immunity.
Well, that should make it easy to vote against it, shouldn't it?
Yeah. So if we keep the pressure up, we have a better shot. If we don't call at all, we have no shot.
And please understand, Susan, it's an uphill battle because these blue dog bush lickers are hell bent on it.
I realize that. But a small chance is a whole lot better than no chance.
Oh yeah, hell yeah. I'm not no fight, no argument out of me.
That's why I'm saying, people, light up the phones and be sure and call Ray's office.
Sylvester Reyes.
Yeah, Reyes. Be sure and call his office. I called them, ironically enough, on March 4th and told him, hey, if this dude wants a job, he had better be aware that he can be targeted for primary challengers. And they snottily said, well, our primary is today. And I said, hey, I'm a Scot. I got a long memory.
Yeah.
I do.
Sure. And I love that. I saw an email that rolled in from an organization called Democrats for America today. Through their efforts, gotten about 2,000 phone calls to Reyes's office. Reyes's office contacted them and said, you're shooting the wrong target. It's not us.
Yeah, I got the same email.
Yeah, and well, did you see the thing a little further down that said where they said, you know, Congressman Reyes is trying to craft a bill that will protect the phone companies that act lawfully? Well, if they're acting lawfully, they don't need protection.
Exactly.
But they're gutless.
So he will get another phone call from me and another threat, and I will carry through on that threat.
Maybe we ought not call them threats, Susan.
How about a promise?
Yeah, there we go.
It's God's own promise, because if I'm alive and walking this earth, come election time next time around, he will be running up against, it's not much, but it will be my money. For specifically that reason.
Yeah, it's not so much put your money where your mouth is as put your money where your phone is.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. All right, Susan.
Light up the phones, people.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye. I'm tired of getting sick when these people cave. I called Sylvester Reyes's office. Did you? Do I need to find the phone number? Yeah, you've got to. You know, they're open tomorrow too. So, you know, if you're inclined to do it, I urge you to. Tell him not to, you know, get a message. Tell him not to cave in, not to be spineless again. Because really, it matters. Never mind the 3 a.m. phone call that comes because, you know, and the president picks it up and has to know what to do. It's not about the 3 a.m. phone call that comes to the president. It's about the 3 a.m. phone call that comes to you. And I don't know about you, but I've gotten them. And they will damn near stop your heart. And whether it's good news or bad, the idea of some computer gathering it in, or some techno goober at AT&T scanning it, or even some unpatriotic, un-American civil servant in the bowels of the National Security Administration listening to it makes me sick. Because there's some things that just need to remain private. And our gladness and our grief are chief among those things. So we'll take a little break and come back. Ecuador. Colombia. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United States could be facing a West Coast ports shutdown on May 1st as longshore workers protest the war in Iraq. Jesse Russell reports.
The International Longshore and Warehouse Union recently sent a letter to AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, announcing that West Coast port workers would be walking off the job on May 1st to demand a withdrawal of troops from Iraq. The letter from ILWU President Robert McElrath says that during a two-week caucus, members adopted a resolution that called for longshore workers to stop work during the day shift on May 1st, 2008, to express their opposition to the war in Iraq. McElrath asked Sweeney in the letter if other AFL-CIO affiliates would be participating in similar events on May 1st, also known worldwide as International Workers' Day, to honor labor history and express support for the troops by bringing them home safely. The letter was sent on February 22nd.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee says he'll continue to push for an AFL-CIO endorsement of Senator Hillary Clinton for president in the wake of her big wins in Ohio and Texas. He says about 52% of the Federation's unions now back Clinton, but a two-thirds majority is needed.
That's very difficult. You know, it's like pushing a rock up the side of a mountain.
Despite denials from the Obama campaign and from Canadian officials, McEntee says there's still serious concern in the labor movement over whether Obama's economic advisor said one thing in private to Canadian officials about NAFTA, while Obama's campaign may have been saying something different to voters.
Did the guy say it? Didn't he say it? Does Barack Obama say something in public and something else in private? I mean, we've got in some way to get to the bottom of that and really understand it, because it will continue to be significant in Pennsylvania.
Six National Education Association chapters of the California Teachers Association are directly affiliating now with the AFL-CIO. It's part of a groundbreaking pact between the AFL-CIO and the independent NEA that allows local chapters of the NEA to directly affiliate with the AFL-CIO. Over 10,000 NEA members are in the AFL-CIO as a result. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
If you are heading toward retirement, as we all are, someday, here is some sobering news. A couple retiring this year should have $225,000 in savings set aside to cover medical costs. That is according to Fidelity Investments, who released a study on Wednesday. And Fidelity isn't the only one with such a projection. According to a study by the Center for Retirement Research, an individual retiring should have $102,000 set aside just for health care in retirement.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Should have how much set aside? Anywhere from $100,000 to $215,000 for health care after retirement? Who? I mean, I'm not. This isn't shoot the messenger time. I love the guys over at laborradio.org. It's not about them. But you need $250,000 set aside. Well, I'll get right on that. Jiminy. And there are politicians out there who's, you know, the private sector needs to take it. We need the, you know, we can't have government involved in health care. And they're treated like serious people when they're clearly crazier than a run-over dog. $100,000 to $200,000 set aside to retire just for health care? Never mind food, shelter, heat, cooling? Oh! You know, I shared an email with you from our correspondent, Michael, the other night, and it generated some responses, and he's followed up.
He says, I heard the podcast today in which you read my email along with Kate's response. Please let Kate know that I wasn't flaming her. I don't think they make flamethrowers, even the real badass action movie kind, that I'd want to match against Kate and her chainsaw. Also, maybe I should be eating my words already regarding the 3 a.m. phone call ads. Did the Obama counter ad, which was almost the exact same ad with the twist that when Obama answers the phone, he won't start a war on Iraq, not air more than once or what? I don't watch much TV, so I really don't know. I wake up today and all I hear about on the radio is how the 3 a.m. phone call ad was the big knockout punch for Clinton here in Ohio. Why does the call always come at precisely 3 a.m. anyway? Good question. Maybe it's just a lot of spin and bunk. I don't know. I just think it's sad that everyone's supposedly so damn scared that something horrible's going to happen to their precious American children sleeping soundly in bed at 3 a.m. due to some scary terrorists or rogue enemy nation. Fear, fear, fear! To me, this is such a non-issue that I find it hard to believe that any Democratic voters would take this seriously. To me, ending the damn Bush war and not starting another stupid war is still a huge, real deal-breaker of an issue. Not this homeland security crap. If there really are national security moms in our party, all I can say is, are you freaking kidding me? See, that part was all in caps. If anything's going to hurt our precious sleeping American children at 3 a.m., it's going to be a levee or a sludge dam breaking. Which brings me to another idea. He says, Bob, I saw Obama speak at a rally town hall meeting in Westerville, Ohio, Sunday afternoon. You'll never guess who introduced Obama. Why, it was Senator Jay Rockefeller. By the way, do the kids in West Virginia call him Jay Rock? Well, they didn't before, but we do now. He's Jay Rock now. Anyway, it was the most lifeless, unenthusiastic introduction I could imagine. I just didn't get it. I was at an early voter rally the day before. Obama supporters met at an African-American Baptist church in downtown Columbus. Our African-American mayor, Mike Coleman, was there. He's an energetic speaker. He got everyone pumped up, and we all marched parade style down to the Board of Elections to cast our early votes. It was great. So anyway, flash forward to Sunday, and your esteemed senator is introducing Obama. Mayor Coleman was there. I kept wondering, why isn't Coleman introducing him? He'd be a lot better. True, we were in Westerville, not Columbus, but it wasn't like we were in West Virginia. Jay Rockefeller? Okay. So anyway, everyone in the crowd is politely clapping, little golf clap, every time Jay finishes a sentence. As a horn listener, as someone a bit more informed, I could barely stomach maybe one or two little golf claps when he said something complimentary about Obama that I agreed with. But for the most part, I just kept thinking about mountaintop removal and telecom immunity and silently said, "Rrr." You got to make the Cheney face when you make that noise, by the way. Rrr. Fast forward to Obama's speech. Good, but certainly not his best. Fast forward to the town hall portion. As one might predict, some of the audience questions were okay. Some were really, really lame. I was encouraged, if only slightly, that when Obama was rattling off clean energy technologies we need to invest in, he did not utter the words coal or clean coal. Not like I really expected any mention of mountaintop removal, but at least he wasn't touting coal. Sunday. No mention, not one mention, of Katrina the entire afternoon. Later, this all got me thinking. Maybe someone needs to ask Senator Obama, or Senator Clinton for that matter, the following. Senator, you already have my vote and my support of your presidential candidacy. However, I'd like to ask you about an issue that has not gotten much attention during this campaign, ethnic cleansing. Most people are familiar with the horrible genocide being perpetrated in the Darfur region of Sudan, although the issue doesn't get near the attention it deserves from the American media. Every American is familiar with the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina and the Bush administration's total incompetence and failure to properly handle this crisis. Unfortunately, Many Americans are under the impression that everything in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast region is back to normal now because the American media no longer likes to talk about it. Thousands of poor folks are still sick and suffering in toxic FEMA trailers or in neglected flood-damaged homes while new casinos are being built in the area. Many poor folks have not returned at all. Barbara Bush seemed to think these folks were better off living in the Houston Astrodome than they were in their pre-Katrina homes. For the peoples most devastated by Hurricane Katrina, things have not improved today, and their former communities are being allowed to die. Meanwhile, in the state of West Virginia, coal companies are using megatons of high explosives to blow the tops off of mountains in order to mine the coal below. These once beautiful green mountains of Appalachia are being turned into dead, gray moonscapes. Toxic valley fills are destroying streams and rivers. Toxic sludge and poisonous coal dust are destroying the homes and killing the children of thousands of West Virginians. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has said that if this were done under West Virginia by a foreign nation, we'd consider it an act of war. Unfortunately, these Appalachian mountain folk just don't have the money necessary to fight back against the powerful coal companies who own both political parties in West Virginia, and so most Americans have never heard of this murderous practice commonly called mountaintop removal. So I ask, as president, how will you help stop ethnic cleansing, whether it be in Darfur or right here at home on the devastated Gulf Coast or in the ongoing devastation of the Appalachians and its people? Says Michael, I don't know, Bob. That is just what having Senator J-Rock in the room Sunday made me think of. Maybe this isn't a good idea to ask the candidates the above question. I just caught the end of tonight's show as I was typing this, and you're right. We have to focus on beating John McCain, but whoever the Democratic candidate may be, I'd like to see him or her use their power to put an end to the ethnic cleansing we face here in America, the things no one wants to talk about. If it's a good idea, I'm sure my above question needs a lot of rewording and polishing up, so edit away. That was beautiful, Michael. He also says, a few weeks ago I ordered a copy of Rise Up West Virginia, and I've since watched it twice. I haven't yet had a chance to write BJ, but all I can really say is, wow. I saw where she had the donated DVD for $15 option on patchworkfilms.com. I wonder if anyone's tried to get a copy of Rise Up to Senator Obama, or to Senator Clinton for that matter, because if not, I'd be happy to pony up the $15 for the cause. I know he's a very busy man right now, running for president and all, but is there any chance that a staffer might take a look at it and with any luck filter the information up the chain? I don't know the answer to that question, Michael. I don't know how deep his ties to things like Illinois coal go. A lot of coal in Illinois. But it couldn't hurt to try. Michael goes on, you'd mentioned in a previous email that Coal River Mountain Watch should try and get a contingent at the Democratic National Convention. How about getting a speaker at the DNC from CRMW, OVEC, to talk about mountaintop removal, or is that just crazy talk? Hell, Clean Coal will probably sponsor the damn convention, huh? I cringe and sometimes scream when I see those ads on CNN with the cord being plugged directly into the filthy piece of coal. Michael says, sorry, I'm going all over the map here. I think I need to give my brain a rest. Peace. Love emails like that. No, you're not all over the map. You're just all over your brain, and that's a good thing. Thanks, Michael. To the phones. Quitter. Huh. Now, I mentioned a little something about South America, Venezuela, Ecuador. Yeah, you following this? Now, okay, here's how it shook out. Oh, you're back. I think. Hold on. Give it a sec. There we go. Okay, let's try again. Hi, right, who have I got?
Bob?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Sandra.
Hey, Sandra, how are you?
All right, listen, I'm just calling this cheap-ass cell phone because I'm too busy trying to put all my pennies away for the $300,000 I need for the health care in my old age. What was that? That was just horrible.
I mean, I got to start rolling pennies the minute the show's over.
Well, I understand they're just giving the information, but I mean, can you believe that is so disturbing and unbelievable? And I feel like we're back in pre-Roosevelt time with when you get old, you just are poor, destitute, and will die a horrible death.
And we may well be, Sandra. We may well be.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of being facetious because it's too scary to imagine, but I'm starting to wonder, you know, what is in store. Because you're my age, right? You're like 44.
Yeah, I just turned 45.
Right, okay, yeah, well, we're exactly the same age. So, you know, our generation had a little bit of hope. At least I did. I came straight out of the affirmative action scene, you know, where things look up and up for black folks. But my, has it turned badly for everybody.
Sandra, it goes to show you how quickly things can turn. I mean, I look back and I just want to cry sometimes when I think about the surplus that we had going into the Bush administration. And like I said, it took him 3 months to run through a couple of $1 trillion.
Well, and I also really resent Bill Clinton for not being able to use that in a public sphere. He let it sit there so they could just give it away to rich people. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah. I get it. You know, do something with it.
I know. I was really quite, you know, people were like the surplus, and I was saying, well, this is kind of disgusting. We have issues. We can deal with that money, but no. Yeah, he left office and let Bush and those people just give it to the rich. And, you know, I'll never forgive Bill Clinton for that and the telecom bill and NAFTA, you know. I don't mean to rant on Bill Clinton, but
no.
I'm just thinking about how things were when, say, you and I were in our 20s, you know, was a bit more hopeful.
Oh, I remember 1992 thinking, you know, here I am, I'm 29 years old, and I've dodged the Reagan bullet, and we've dodged the Bush bullet. We get Bill Clinton, and things are going to get better. And, you know, to a certain extent, they did. I mean, it was a huge peacetime expansion of the economy. A lot of things were done right, but I agree with you. But by the same token, let's not forget what happened in the interim, Sandra. I remember toward the end of the 2000 campaign, I went down to see Al Gore give a speech on the steps of the West Virginia State House, and he said, you know, look it. Everybody's joking about this lockbox I keep talking about, but he said, I'm deadly in earnest. We need to put this money to where nobody can get at it, and that way we can make Social Security rock solid for the next 100 years. And that kind of made sense to me because, you know, at the time and even currently, I still have dreams of getting to be an old guy.
Well, no, but now we have, you know, the likes of Obama talking about Social Security, and any time these people talk about it, they're alluding to privatization, which means the destruction of Social Security. And take my word for it, people who are a little bit younger than us, they don't even know what the hell Social Security is. They don't even realize it's an insurance thing. You know, they think it's a 401 type situation, you know. The level of ignorance and misinformation is, you know, sort of mind-numbing to me. And I resent Obama for even bringing it up because he's not bringing it up like, let's raise the payroll taxes on all these rich mothers. No, he's talking in terms of cutting benefits or turning parts of it over to Wall Street, and I don't appreciate it.
No, see, if anybody's going to go gamble with that money, I want my chunk, and I'm going to enjoy myself in Vegas while I'm doing it.
Well, it might well be, because that's what's going to happen to it if they get a hold of it. You know what I'm saying? It's just going to be another bubble, another wealth distribution mechanism away from us. So, I don't know. I'm sort of... I've been listening to your station all day today, so I'm quite riled up.
Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe the horn needs to get a whole bunch of Rolaids and get them just repackaged with, you know, our little logo on it. Maybe that's the coolest thing we can give away, because I get to the end of the day and I could just mainline them, Sandra. I could, because
I hear you.
You know, but privatized. I can't. I know. I heard that stuff, and it makes me insane, because Social Security is a promise. It's more than a contract. It's more than an insurance policy. It is a promise that the American people make to each other. It's a promise that our generation and the generation immediately before us made to our elders that it would be there. And you know what? I want the promise kept.
No, not only that, but I mean, did you see that movie, Sicko?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that Tony Benn, who was he's an excellent sort of old-time lefty, when he was sitting there talking about what it meant to him to get his national insurance and how having health care makes people empowered to do other things so they can participate in the democracy, you know? And it's just sort of, Social Security is a similar type of enterprise where it provides a minimum income for Americans, you know, so you're not facing destitution totally. And I don't think people here now seem to think that it's okay that large swaths of our society is going to go that way.
And the idea that, I mean, I'm raising kids. I've heard you talk about your nieces. You know what? Where's the $100,000? Never mind the $200,000. Where are we supposed to pull the $100,000 from?
No, it's obscene because you get people like who runs this hospital in Dallas taking $1 million to keep it available for just the rich. No one should make $1 million running a hospital, Bob. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think it's $1 million difficult, if I understand you correctly.
Well, no, what I mean is that these are sort of institutions that should be dealt with by government. You know, these are the commons. Healthcare is the commons. It's not something to profit on. It's sick.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I keep switching back and forth from Social Security to healthcare, but to me it's all the same, you know, from healthcare and minimal income.
Sure it is, because they all dovetail into the same effect. If you want to continue having a... You know, whatever happened to the concept of the golden years, Sandra?
Oh, I know. And also, what about, you know, what Roosevelt said, that a necessitous man is not free?
Well, yeah, and the four freedoms that Roosevelt talked about, what were they? Freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom from hunger?
Right, and he talked about the economic royalist. I mean, that's like one of my favorite speeches, because it's hella radical, right?
Yeah.
What he's talking about, and... You know, you don't even hear anything even approaching that sort of dialogue now. Of course, Roosevelt didn't extend it to black folks, but let's not mix that in right now.
Yeah, I already did. Yeah, I already made it a little bit rough starting out with the Alamo, maybe. So, yeah. Hey, Sam.
Anyway, no, I guess I'm just sort of a bit, you know, despairing on the lack of sort of, you know, people don't understand what is possible here. You know, we don't have to be in this situation in this country. You
well,
know?
You know what? In a way, Sandra, you're pointing toward something that is similar. During the the birthing of the civil rights movement, there was a debate between the people who argued for incrementalism and the people who argued for change it now, fix it all.
Right.
And I think this is that same debate again, because what I get when I go and read Obama's health plan and I read Hillary's health plan, they both smack of incrementalism. You know,
well, and they also ahead.
No, please go on.
No, and they also don't deal with the big elephant in the room, which is the profit centers of the insurances. They still want to. I mean, Hillary wants to go so far as to force everyone to pay into that rapacious profit center. You know, they won't even. Only John Edwards was willing to take them out of the equation. You see what I mean? And then it's percentage.
Yeah, and that's the thing that galls me most of all. I don't know if it's a matter of ego, Sandra, or a matter of being afraid of the insurance interests, but H.R. 676 is still sitting there. I mean, it's not like it's been floated out to sea or anything. It's H.R. 676. It's the Medicare for All Act, and it simply expands Medicare to cover the entirety of the American population.
Well, you know, I can always sort of reflect back on Guy James, because, you know, he kills me, because there's a real sort of dark edge to him when he starts talking about how stupid Americans are. It kills me, because there's this sort of idea that, oh no, if I sign on to this health care, you know, I'm not going to get as good care, and, you know, it's all about what I can get. You know what I'm saying? It's like this sense that well, if this other guy don't have his, that's too bad, but don't mess with mine because, you know,
well,
I don't want mine.
But how do you take one, and there are 50 million people in this country, Sandra, who don't have a lick of insurance, who are...
Hey, that's me.
Yeah, I'm at the same party. But how do you take one who isn't you and me, because, you know, we're kind of lit up, we're kind of informed, we got an idea what's going on. How do you look at them and say, listen, some insurance is better than no insurance?
Well, you have to convince the people who are insured, which is like 90%, I don't know what the percentage would be, 50 million, whatever, a majority of people who have access to some insurance that, you know, taking care of that problem won't infringe on them, you see? And
yeah.
I think that's a total bad attitude about it, because if people don't want to say a sense of community about it, I don't know how it's going to be solved, you know?
Well, it astonishes me, Sandra, what's left of American business hasn't realized how much better something like H.R. 676 would be for them, because that's the day we'll get universal health care.
Well, and that's the thing I don't understand, because when you have to spend $1,500 per car just on the health aspect of it, you would think that those business pigs would be knocking down Congress trying to get nationalized health care. And for the life of me, I don't understand, because everything's going global, and these businesses have to compete with countries like Airbus in France. Them people don't have to worry about health care costs, see?
No, and that's how they can kick their butts in contract presentations. Sure,
and that's why they can run Boeing off the table and get a nice fat contract from us building military hardware. All of that is just beyond, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. But even closer to home, what was it in the last couple of years? How many plants did Toyota decide not to build in the United States because they could go to Canada, where the workforce was better educated, and B, healthcare was part of the package?
Yeah, no. I mean, it is sort of, when you think that business is like everything in this country, that you could make the argument like you just did, and things would change. But I think that the healthcare insurance, I don't know what kind of lock they have. I mean, it wasn't so serious. It would just be something to study.
Well, the lock they have, Sandra, is just plain and simple money.
That's it. And then passing the money around to the so-called lawmakers, right?
Yeah. The poor little, you know, with their noses up against the frosty window panes looking in at us lawmakers. Right. Yeah, them.
Oh, God. Well, no, but it's just, you know, I mean, I hate to keep reflecting back on history, but you know, part of the reason why we didn't get health care when Truman was trying to do it was people use the idea that, you know, oh no, we don't want to be in the same hospitals with black folks.
Oh Lord, yes, yeah.
You know, and that was part of why it didn't happen when it could have. You know, so racism rears its ugly head sort of nonstop in this country. But
if we were really Sandra, if we were really paying attention, I don't think we could touch an issue that we couldn't find an element of racism injecting itself into.
Oh, I know, but, you know, I try not to see a racial issue under every cup, but at times, you know, the analysis is like Marxism. It's warranted. You know, it permeates every possible discussion in America, you know, along with class, which is never dealt with. But race, boy, it's off the hook here. I mean, I live in California, so, you know, I'm way away from you guys, but, you know, you have your little issues here, like locking every black person up in prison.
Yeah, you know, why build schools when we can contract with a private company to build prisons? Yeah, it's just business.
Well, anyway, I guess that was enough of a rant. You know, I appreciate it.
Oh, I love our conversation, Sandra. Anytime, anytime.
Okay, have a good evening.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
I love hearing the sounds of the play in the background. Sound like somebody was having fun. All right, let's see if there's somebody here. Hi, who have I got?
Good evening.
Hey, David, what's up, man?
Well, I was listening to your conversation about health care, and you keep saying, well, why won't they do anything, or why won't anyone do anything? Well, I think it's a very simple answer. Because once everything is initiated and the ball is in play, more and more we'll stop to care about them because we got what we wanted. And then a lot of people will just leave leave the area of the political arena. And then what you have is the Republicans will come in and they'll take whatever left and say, see what they did? And nobody's doing anything anymore. And everyone's got everything now. Oh, and they'll make a scare about it. Really, it's all just a job, Bob. And I mean, I know a lot of people, I'm always questionable when people always tell me, oh, I care. I care about you. I don't think they really mean it. I think what it is it's a chemical reaction. It's a chemistry in someone's mind, and they just have to say they care because it's really uncertain at that point. And
yeah,
I
know. It's our little idiocracy moment. Welcome to Costco. I love you.
Right, right. But I don't think.
I don't necessarily buy into that though, David. Because
I know. I put myself in the seat of a politician, and I would say, how could you care about millions of people, and for how long could you care about people? And to me, that's a really hard question, because if everything perishes eventually, Bob, after a while you start developing that in your mind. You think, well, if everything's going to perish, I'm going to perish, this is going to perish, and you just go down the hole like Hunter Thompson did.
And you know, I don't know. You know, that's when you do the Russian dynamite circle and you sit in the middle of it and hope it doesn't work. You know, then you just
right.
go.
Right.
No, but God, I can't do it, David. I can't
I
do
know,
it.
I know. I'm in the situation where I don't have a family, so I can think about these.
Yeah, but you know what? Look, yeah. What you're saying is indirectly something that I've accused the other side, especially the so-called evangelicals, what I
yeah.
call the religion industry, of being guilty of. And that is being used as, what they perceive to be well-meaning fools where the abortion debate is concerned.
Right.
The Republicans are out there every year, oh, we've got to stop the Holocaust of abortion. And the little fundies come out from behind the baseboards like the cockroaches that they are, and they scurry over to the voting booth, and they vote Republican because the Republicans are going to save the fetuses. And they get into office, David, and they never do a damn thing about abortion rights. They never try to decriminalize it because they know that the minute that they take care of abortion, that the cockroaches are going to go back behind the baseboards and they're never going to get them out again. So I guess what you're saying is that the left or liberals or Democrats or whatever uses health care in the same way?
Yeah, I think they do, and I think it's a very effective business strategy because let's realize everything's a business now.
I remember. Do you remember the Mel Martinez memo that came out during the Terry Schiavo debate? The Terry Schiavo reality show.
I don't think I ever caught that one.
Mel Martinez issued a memo, and he was right wing Republican senator from Florida. He issued a memo to Republicans saying, let's stay on top of this because Terry Schiavo's little gelatinous brain is really, really good for Republicans, and it makes it clear that the Democrats don't care about life. As pure and out there and clear a confession of the Machiavellian politics of the GOP as has ever been written.
The debate we're going to have if we ever do get free health care, and this is why it's one of those issues, are we going to know when to stop? Like, we give free health care, and then what is the catch with that, And a lot of people, they'll start to complain about social engineering, even though to a degree, let's face it, we're all social engineered, so...
But if the American people do that, David, haven't we just tacitly confessed that we really are dumber than a bag of hammers? Because, you know what, it works really well in other parts of the so-called first world. It works well in Britain. It works well in France. It works well in Germany and Sweden and Italy and yada yada. It works well. It works well in Japan. It works well in Australia. It's an admission that we're idiots. We couldn't do that kind of health care because it'll make us commies.
You know what I think would happen if we did get it? And I hate to be such a cynic like this, but one of my friends is a nurse, and she's in the healthcare system or whatever. And she realizes what people do in small towns. a lot of people, since they're so coddled and everything is in a society where, oh, well, you need to go to the doctor. Immediately people say that. Well, why don't you go to the doctor when they don't really have to? And she sees just like tons and tons of people in the emergency room for nothing.
That's an education issue, David, because
yeah.
if you've got the latest virus going around,
right.
One of two things is going to happen. It's going to run its course, and you're going to get well, or you're going to die.
Oh, my God. And she told me that's a horror story. She said you never want to know the kind of diseases that they never tell the public that's an outbreak in your community. And she said,
they turned around a cruise ship bound for Mexico the other day because the norovirus had blown out on it. You would have to have a gun at my head to get me on a cruise ship. Those things are filthy.
I know what you're saying. The other thing I wanted to bring up was that, oh man, since nobody's picking up, it's a controversial topic about the blogs and the blogospheres and the
Yeah, sometimes I throw stuff out there and it means something to me and it just goes with everybody else.
You know, I'll tell this to people. Lionel said it the same way. He said, do you think that I would want any other president than Bush if I was in radio? So are you kidding me? And he just started talking about the points of why this was such a godsend for his type of radio.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, if you're really good at what you do.
Yeah.
It's not going to be impossible to go on the air the day the Democrat is inaugurated, because you're going to want to be there to talk about, because we're never going to have it perfect, and if you're about discussion and dialogue the way we are, there's always going to be plenty to talk about. So I genuinely do want a Democrat in the White House, but I think all those right wing talkers, they are praying for Hillary Clinton, because that's what they built the machine to do.
Hmm. And on the same side of things, yeah, I can see as a lot of bloggers, they want that. And you know what that ties into? That also ties into another whole discussion of the issues of greed, the issues of capitalism, and how, let's face it, to me, capitalism is never going to get better. It's parasitic, and it's eventually going to go toward the way, either towards socialism, proto-fascism, or to something. Well, cannibalism. That might have been the sequel in Idiocracy.
You're right, though. The natural look. When a nation makes a decision to become empire, a nation dooms itself, because all empires fall.
Mm-hmm.
And when a nation decides to just throw the barn doors open and let the market run wild, it guarantees that the market will eventually collapse, no matter how often you talk about how the free market is the answer to all problems. It's gonna collapse, and the thing is that old paradigm of Wall Street brokers jumping out of the windows, that's largely BS. The people who suffered during the collapse, the economic collapse that we call the Great Depression, were not the Wall Street brokers. Okay, they found a way to survive. But little people on the downslope from Wall Street, into little small town America, where the money dried up, went away, and the banks closed down, those were the people who scratched from day to blessed day.
You know, the truth is, Bob, I don't know. See, I look at this as a way of, and I hope people understand me when I say this, I look at this as a comeuppance against all of American people when we said, I used to say this too, I say, well, I'm doing good, I don't know about the rest of the country, but then, I catch myself and think, I don't really know if anyone's doing good. They could be lying to me. And they could have been lying to me in the 80s. They could have been lying to me in the 90s. I don't know. So, but now I think there's a difference. It's kind of like the same way of how the sexual revolution happened. A lot of people are more open about sharing their economic problems, maybe. I just thought that, it is a bit of engineering if you think about it, Bob, when you say, well, the economy was doing good in the 80s and 70s and 60s, but, I mean, I don't really know. Maybe we were never doing good, and just so many people were silent about
No, well, you're touching you're touching something there that, that I think is very valid, David, and that is that success is a relative thing.
Right.
That and you know, a lot of people got blown by in the economic expansion of the 90s. I mean, I lived in West Virginia during that whole time, David.
Right.
And I used to, you know, I used to look at Agnes and say, you know, the funny thing about being here in West Virginia is that if they're paving the streets of every other state in the union with gold, we'll still be driving on dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the nature of our little setup. But it was better then than it is now. There's no doubt about it. It's all a question of degree. There are no absolutes here.
Right. Well, you know, I think what it comes down to, people who built their system of living, especially people like you were saying in the blogosphere and stuff like that, it's always myself first kind of society that we built, and unfortunately that's not going to work for any of us. It has to be us together.
Yeah, a sense of community, sure.
United States. Us.
Yeah, the Union. You'll notice that's something the Republicans never call the United States anymore. We're never
right.
The Union. We don't like to say it. Republicans don't like to say Union and have it mean anything good.
If you have a conversation, and I do have a conversation with a very enlightened right-winger, that's an oxymoron, but he says, I believe myself as a self-made man. And every time you have this discussion or this dialogue, the problem is they will never admit to not being self-made, because somewhere along the line it was injected into them that there's shame to it if you're not self-made. And we need to, and you know, it's the same kind of shame of, oh, you're gay, oh, that's awful, it's a plague, it's, oh, you're not self-made, oh my God, because, you know, it's one of those facades again, be self-made. It's so ridiculous. And you know, I had this discussion, I explained to him, I said, what do you mean self-made? Explain this to me. And he goes, well, you know, that's just the way I see it. And you really can't say anything after that. And that's really what we're dealing with when we go right to the base of it, Bob. It's that self-made philosophy. When everything falls apart, it's like, well, I'm self-made.
Yeah, but see, that's a chimera. I was just looking for something it makes its rounds on the internet every now and then, talking about the self-made man,
right.
and it's told from the perspective of a right-wing conservative Republican voter. You know, he gets up in the morning and he goes to the sink and he fills his coffee pot with water that was that's actually clean and fit to drink, because some liberal somewhere cared about installing a water plant that would purify water for the community. And he, you know, and it goes on through his day, and he drives to work in a car that is safe because some liberal out there cared about product safety standards, and
right.
He drives on roads that were built by government and taxpayer built by the government on taxpayer dollars because some liberal somewhere thought it might be nice to have a decent transportation system in this country. There is no such thing as a self-made man.
You know what's funny? I did say that. I read him that article this. And you know what his answer was? And this is what we're going to come across. This is going to be the answer. They're going to say, well, most conservatives are the ones who started these businesses and ideas. It's, again, that myth. It's history revision, thinking that...
But it wasn't. Businesses... But David,
they have a business.
David, businesses didn't do that. That was done by government.
I know.
You know,
I know.
When these conservatives get a long weekend, they pack the kids up in the family truckster and they go off to spend a weekend camping in the state parks. I love that. I forget who the comedian was that said, I never understood white people, you know, want to go camping, go out and live in the woods, pretend like they ain't got a house. But, you know, so that's what he does, and he goes to a state park. Well, I don't know how it is in Maine, David, but here in West Virginia, if you go to a state park, you're going to see architecture And you're going to see building that was put together at the beginning that had its roots in the WPA, the Works Progress Administration, and the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, when America was out of work during the Depression, that FDR put in place to give some give people some level of work, and that's how most of the state parks got built.
It's, you know what it is? It's the myth built upon myth. It's history revisionism at its finest. It's the only thing that is left just standing. They say, well, after you say everything, what's happening around you? Well, I'm a self-made man. We can get through this. And it always goes back to that because...
Oh, yeah, and it's, I'm going to pull myself up by my own bootstraps. You know, but dadgummit, after 8 years of Republican rule, you can't pull yourself up by bootstraps when the boots just got repoed.
You know, Bob, I tried, you know, I said this before, but try telling that to a heroin addict. Say, hey, take that needle out of your arm. It's possible.
If you ever pick up William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch, you will find him discussing something that he calls the algebra of need. And it's a brilliant concept. And he's applying it in terms of addiction, but it can also be applied very easily in terms of most of American so-called culture. You know, the study that came out, oh, it was some sort of statistical poll, or you know how that crap works.
Right.
The happiest people on planet Earth are the Danes.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, the Danes are not the people who have the highest percentage of widescreen LCD televisions or high definition or Blu-ray or... You know, they're not, those aren't that people. They do, however, have a decent, a significant education system. They have a social structure that tries not to let people fall through the cracks. They have a high literacy rate. They have health care. And they have reasonably responsive government. And they are the happiest people on earth. Guess what? I don't think we were in the top 10, David.
And you know what a conservative will tell you? And they say, well, if you want that to happen, that's going to take a lot of social engineering. See? It's that reverse door. It's that revolving door. It's always going to roll around. They don't even understand. They don't get it. That they are themselves being social engineered to degrees that they can never fathom. They're not even going to go that place. It's that willful ignorance. I'm turning the light off. That room. No.
Right. Yeah. I'm better than all that. Yeah. I'm told that I should be receiving momentarily the new Joe Conservative thing. Let's see what it sounds like.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. I'll tell you what, Bob. I'll let you go and you can read that.
Okay, I will. Let's see what this thing looks like.
All right.
Hey, David. Have a great night. Talk to you soon.
Right,
all right. Bye.
Peace.
They are socially engineered. David's right in that regard. And they say social engineering like it's some sort of evil, you know, mad scientist boo kind of thing. But what is conservatism but social engineering on a hateful scale? Yeah, here we go. The new Joe Conservative. Joe Conservative wakes up in the morning. He goes to the bathroom. He flushes his toilet and brushes his teeth, mindful that each flush and brush costs him about 43 cents to his privatized water provider. His wacky liberal neighbor keeps badgering the company to disclose how clean and safe their water is, but no one ever finds out. Just to be safe, Joe Conservative boils his drinking water. Oh, my God. Joe steps outside and coughs. The pollution is especially bad today, but the smokiest cars are the cheapest ones, so everyone buys them. Joe Conservative checks to make sure he has enough toll money for the three different private roads he must drive to work. There's no public transportation, so traffic is backed up, and his 10-mile commute takes an hour. On the way, he drops his 12-year-old daughter off at the clothing factory she works at. Paying for kids to go to private school until they're 18 is a luxury, and Joe needs the extra income coming in. Times are hard, and there are no social safety nets. He gets to work 5 minutes late and misses the call for Christian prayer, and is immediately docked by his employer. He's not feeling well today, but he has no health insurance since neither his employer nor his government provided, and paying for it himself is really expensive since he has a precondition. He just hopes for the best. Joe's workday is 12 hours long, because there's no regulation over working hours, and Joe will lose his job if he complains or unionizes. Today is an especially bad day. Joe's manager demands that he work until midnight, a 16-hour day. Joe does, knowing that he'll lose his job if he doesn't. Finally, after midnight, Joe gets to pick up his daughter and go home. His daughter shows him the deep cut she got on the industrial sewing machine today. Joe is outraged and asks why she doesn't have metal mesh gloves or other protection. She says the company won't provide it, and she'll have to pay for it out of her own pocket. Joe looks at the wound and decides they'll use an over-the-counter disinfectant and bandages until it heals. She'll have a scar, but getting stitches at the emergency room is expensive. His daughter also complains that the manager made suggestive overtures toward her. Joe counsels her to be a good girl and not rock the boat, or she'll get fired and they'll be out the income. His daughter says she can't wait till she's 18 so she can vote for change and or go to the Iraq War. They get home, and there's a message from his elderly father who can't afford to pay his medical or heating bills. Joe can hear him coughing and shivering. Joe turns on the radio, and the top story is a proposal in Congress to raise the voting age to 25. A rare liberal opinionator states that it's an attempt to keep power out of the hands of working-class Americans. The conservative host immediately quashes him, calling him a utopian idealist, and agreeing that people aren't mature enough to make good choices until they're at least 25. Joe chuckles at the wine-swilling, cheese-eating liberal egghead and thinks, "Thank God I live in America, where I have freedom." We're not that far off, are we? That Joe Conservatives America may actually already be here. It may actually already be here. Oh, by the way, I said, where am I going to get $100,000? I can always count on you guys. I get an email that says, "Bob, pull it out of your ass." That's us, sensitive liberals. Meanwhile, a couple of other comments that have rolled in. This query, when will our side start telling the truth? There is no retirement for anyone but the rich anymore. I know people across America who work into their mid-80s. Out here, out on the West Coast, it's common. Another note. My doctor wants single-payer health care. If he thought any different, I'd fire him. Why? Because he'd be seeing me for money. Yeah. And finally, there's no such thing as self-made people. It starts with mama's boob. Someone giving you a diaper, or education, etc. We're a social animal. Self-made guy? Chip him off an ice block and set him loose on the ocean. There has never been a self-made person in the history of this nation. There just hasn't. Whether we like it or not, we are tribal people. The fact that we don't necessarily see the boundaries of the tribe makes us no less tribal. And I'm told, by the way, that the blog idea, what I was saying about blogs and, you know, whether or not we actually want a Democrat in the White House, I'm told the blog idea didn't fall flat. It needs time. Keep waving it. folks just can't grasp the fact that they are being thrown into a ring to fight against each other. In the meantime, the Rovians are gleefully rubbing their hands together, making orgasmic gurgles in the back of their throats. One more time, the Constitution will be suspended or McCain will roll up Pennsylvania Avenue. There were no elections. Sigh. I have to believe that we have a chance. If we're just done, hell. I can just turn the lights off and go home and, you know, drink beer. Wait for the apocalypse. After all, here in West Virginia, I got a pretty good seat. Because I know from the history of my own family that when it hits the fan, it blows on us. So, you know, I'm gonna keep my focus. For once in my life, I'm gonna try not to be so confounded ADD. My focus is going to remain getting these bastards out of power and keeping John McCain out of power. There's plenty to talk about with John McCain. There's plenty wrong with John McCain. It's a matter of getting the rest of America to see how wrong John McCain is and to fight the already paved uphill battle with some people of trying to convince them that no, Hillary Clinton is not a ball-busting bitch, and no, Barack Obama is not a crypto-Muslim. Who do we have to fight in that regard? You know who we have to fight in that regard. We have to fight the devilish duo of the religion industry and the Republican Party, the two most hateful R's that I can think of at present in the English language. So that's it for tonight. Thanks for your calls, your emails. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your contributions in keeping this going. It's March. We're at it again. Let's see if we can make it all the way to the actual goal since we get a couple of extra days this month. Unfortunately, Peter Godbold is once again a rerun. It is no fault of his own. He's been counting phone company trucks up and down his little dirt road in Florida today. There's been a lot of them. None of them have figured out quite what's wrong yet. Here's hoping they do by maybe, say, tomorrow. I can tell you with certainty that Peter is having a fit. He was almost happy earlier today because his little green DSL light went blink, and then it went boom, and went off again. And that's what it's been pretty much all day long. On, off, on, off, on, off, like some sort of sick binary code. Many thanks to Peter, who's our IT consultant. I can still reach him by phone with our crises. He was most commiserative when I was explaining to him what Asus did to me today. Many thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, at whiterosesociety.org. If you value what happens on the horn, you value whiterosesociety.org and all the work that Ben Birch does. Our particular thanks go out to the hard-working members of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, who bring you, in part, every single program that airs on the horn every month. Be a part of the solution and join Coal River Mountain Watch. I can't tell you how inexpensive it is. crmw.net, be part of the solution. And always, 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 RMR. Gina, it's all for you.
compensate for being in that time on Air Force One. And that's such a powerful thing that people don't really, you know, they don't really.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 108 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, January the 24th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on Thursday, January the 24th, 2008, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to participate. I'll be giving out the toll-free numbers and the toll numbers shortly. If you're not listening shortly after 9 p.m., you're listening to one of the archive streams, and we appreciate your listening in any way. We are glad to have you participate in the show and email us later or email us during the show or call in any way you'd like to participate. This is Conversation Radio. Bob is completely correct that many people do listen to these shows as a podcast or a stream. In fact, probably the majority of the listeners to this network do listen at their own schedule at some point other than the time that it is actually airing. Of course, being listed over at White Rose Society is a huge advantage. White Rose Society, of course, carries our streams and is known to be the holy grail aggressive talk radio on the Internet. You can find millions of hours there. Maybe you might like to drop White Rose an email to webmaster@whiterosesociety.org, and we can get Strictly Confidential there, too. You will find the name there, but actually there are no working links all the way back to August, July, something like that. But anyway, it would be great to have this show available as an archive there, too. That's a wonderful advantage to be included amongst the wonderful progressive programming over at White Rose Society. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to our chat room, which is active as we speak. You'll find links to the main Head On Radio Network site, where you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. As I said, the toll-free line is 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates into 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save listener-supported radio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. We do have a guest this evening. The guest will be joining us at 9:30, and I'm thrilled to have this man with us this evening. It is Alexander Robinson, and he is the executive director of the National Black Justice